Welcome back, everybody. Hi. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. on this Tuesday morning. I hope everybody's having a good Tuesday. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You can send us a text there, too. It's 312-981-7200. Well, what can I say about my next guest? One of my favorite guests ever, a tremendous actor, a incredible storyteller, and a great writer, and a guy who hosts one of the most entertaining podcasts out there, and great friend of the show, and I'm so proud to say, actor Stephen Tobolowsky is about to join us. His latest book is called My Adventures with God. It is tremendous. And the Tobolowsky Files podcast has returned. You can check out TobolowskyFiles.com. We have a link on our Facebook page as well. And what else can you say? But he's great, and we welcome him back to the show, Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen, how are you?
I am so good, Nick. It's so good to hear your sweet voice, I got to tell you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, and congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. In 2 days, I will be officially inducted into the WGN Walk of Fame. So.
Yes, but you have been inducted in our hearts many years before.
Oh, that's sweet, Stephen. Thank you so much. So you've been touring to promote the book. How's that been going?
Wow. It reminded me of how much I hate traveling. The schedule, you get the idea that the schedule is put together by a robot because there's no human needs allowed for on the schedule. There's no time to eat. You're always flying on Southwest, which means there's no food. You never know who's going to pick you up. You never know what the venue's going to be. And it becomes very stressful for a brief period of time, and then it becomes very zen, and you just kind of relax. The thing that was most remarkable, like Annie and I, we just got home a few days ago. We were on the road for about 3.5 weeks. Almost every place we went, there was someone from our past in these cities.
Is that right?
That we went to. Yeah, in Washington, D.C., there was the guy who drove in our carpool in elementary school in Los Angeles.
Wow.
He got divorced and moved to Washington, and he was sitting there on the front row.
That's amazing.
Kenji. Oh, my gosh. My brother's two kids, Deborah and Mark, were in Washington, D.C. They were sitting on the front row. When I went to – I know you listened to the podcast some. Do you remember me talking about my Aunt Hermine?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So she was the woman who wrote the Equal Rights Amendment for the state of Texas and got it passed. Mm-hmm. She wrote the Equal Rights Amendment, was one of the authors for the United States that didn't get passed. She was a great pioneer of women's rights in Texas, but she was important to me because she was the person who ended up convincing my parents to get me a piano when I was a little boy to learn how to play because she thought I would be a pianist. She was one of my greatest advocates. I was in Atlanta, and I run into two people who said they were my cousins that I never met in my life, and they used to live outside of Dallas, and they would visit at Aunt Hermine's house all the time. People from all over my life would come and visit, and it's kind of like when you do a show on Broadway. When you do a show on Broadway, you see everybody in the world that you ever knew. They always come to the show and you see them afterwards. So that was the high point of the book tour, was seeing people from my past.
Wow. And how surprising was that, huh, Stephen, to just see these people that you haven't seen and like cousins you haven't met? That's really amazing.
Oh, it blew me away. It blew me away. And when I was in New York doing I don't know if you remember this podcast. When I was in Illinois and I broke my toe on the last day of dance class, our dance teacher, Blake Atherton, lifted me up in her arms and carried me out of the school, threw me in her Volkswagen, drove me to the hospital, sat with me in the emergency room, and the next day was my last day at school, and Beth and I escaped from the University of Illinois, and I never saw Blake again. And she was always one of these people that stood as a hero in my life, that she did this enormously heroic act, this little girl dancer, but she was strong. And she showed up, drove 3.5 hours from upstate New York to come see me do the show, and I got to see her after decades. It's phenomenal. It's not only phenomenal, but it also makes you feel a little closer to death.
It's interesting you talk about, you know, then all of the hassles in terms of traveling and the scheduling and stuff, it still just must take a back burner to experiences like that.
Yes. When we went to Woodstock, New York, they got Ann and I a little cabin down by a stream, and there was nothing there. There was no reception, no real internet, no nothing. And all we could do was stay in this little cabin with the noise of water going by. And we went like, wow, our entire rhythm changed. Our entire life changed. Why don't we do this more? And we go like, well, because we live in Los Angeles. That ain't going to happen. But it was great to have that one moment of seeing what life used to be like before the internet.
Yeah. Wow. Really amazing stuff. Now, what do you do at your appearances for the book tour? Do you tell stories? Do you read from the book?
I do different things. On some of the places, I will read stories from the book. Like at Woodstock, I performed a story, one of the longer stories, the kind of broken neck story I think I've told here on the show.
Yeah.
So it's about a 40-minute story. So I told that story, and then I did a Q&A. And the interesting thing about the Q&A, the Q&A's over my adventures with God, over the Q&A's over Dangerous Animals Club. And that is, I love both books. You know, they're both children. I love them both equally. But when you write a book like My Adventures with God, the Q&A afterwards gets to be very serious sometimes.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, people start asking existential questions about their lives. And so that was very interesting. The questions. I talked to one woman who's facing a real health challenge in Woodstock. She has multiple sclerosis. And so after the end of my presentation, her question was, where does hope fit into all of this?
Wow.
And I said, well, it depends. You know, hope is very important. It gives us purpose. But at the same time, hope was in Pandora's box. You know, it could lead us astray. And she says, you don't understand. I have MS. I'm having difficulty having hope. And you deal, then suddenly everything gets very real. And I said, who is your doctor? Who are you talking to? Let me talk to my son. He's in medical school. Let's see if we could find something. Everything gets very real very quickly when you're on the road.
Yeah. Well, the book is very, there's a beautiful bunch of, you know, philosophy in it. It is an existential book, and there are some really wonderful. I mean, the whole thing is great, Stephen. Really, I adore the book.
Thank you.
But I can see the Q&As getting, you know, that way, because that's kind of what the book is about. Stephen, you titled the book "My Adventures with God," so
yeah, but it's kind of funny too.
That's a funny title too. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. I don't want to take away from that. I think there's a lot of humor in the book, absolutely.
But the number one question people always asked was, well, why did you write this book? And it was because, you know, Simon & Schuster asked me to write the book. And Ben was saying, like, well, we love Dangerous Animals Club. Ben is my editor. He says, we love Dangerous Animals Club. But the thing that people are really glomming onto is the humor in your stories and how sometimes your story have these spiritual bent. Could you write another book that's all these spiritual stories that are kind of funny or moving or, you know, that kind of stuff? Like, oh, sure, not a problem.
Yeah.
I had no idea, you know, what I was going to write. So it took a while to kind of cobble it together. But it was enjoyable. It was an enjoyable process, I must say.
When you were telling some of the stories from your childhood, did you remember things that you had forgotten? And does that happen when you tell stories? Do you suddenly go, I just remembered that?
Well, this is like so interesting because it's what I'm discovering with this new bunch of podcasts I'm doing now. I was in Seattle telling some of the stories from Adventures with God, and I was in the hotel lobby, and one of the young men, a college student, was saying, like, well, when you tell these true stories, does it change? And I said, what, the story? And he goes, no, the truth. And I went, yeah, you know, I think it can. Yeah. And then I was in an existential crisis because I realized sometimes in me telling these stories, you lose track of what really happened and what you wished happened. And you can morph the truth. I learned with my whole broken neck thing that a lot of times the truth is nothing more than a conspiracy of brain chemicals. you know?
Yeah, Stephen, hang on, Stephen. We have to take a break, okay? Yeah. And then we'll come right back. Stephen Tobolowsky is here, one of my favorite guests of all time, and he wanted to join us on this, you know, the week leading up to, the days leading up to my induction into the Walk of Fame. And we thought, let's get one of my favorite guests of all time on. And he's got a book out called My Adventures with God. We're talking about that. And he also has the Tobolowsky Files podcast. You can also see him on the Goldberg, Silicon Valley. And, and we have to celebrate the fact that One Day at a Time got renewed on Netflix. All of that and more with one of my favorite guests ever. And we'll talk more right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, seventh floor of Trib Tower. We're going to get another visit from Slip Skipley, Skip's brother, when we do a pop-up video a little bit later on this morning. Esmeralda and I will have that challenge. It is Tuesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. My guest is the author of the new book, My Adventures with God, a tremendous actor, a great storyteller, a great friend of the show, one of my favorite people in the world, Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Nick. Thank you, sir.
So you were talking about how this guy asked you if the truth changes when you tell these stories. Did you want to pick up from there again?
Yeah, and I think maybe it can. The clearest example is that I have a lot of stories in my Adventures with God and Dangerous Animals Club about my first girlfriend, Beth.
Yes.
Right? A lot of stories about Beth. And my wife, Anne, was saying, you know, you're going to have to tell Beth that you're writing these stories about her.
Yeah.
So when I was writing Dangerous Animals Club, I called her up. I had to find out where she was. I didn't have her number anymore. I hadn't seen her in like over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we broke up, it was not good. And so I found her through a series of friends. We were meeting for lunch, and I figured she thought I was doing the goodbye tour, like I had some sort of fatal disease, and I was saying goodbye to everyone. And as I looked at her across the table, after having not seen her for so long, I realized that the Beth in my stories was, in a way, this other person than the person who was sitting across from me. And I was stuck with the very real dilemma that in telling true stories about this person that I loved so much when I was in my 20s, I may have, in fact, changed the truth, even though I don't really know how that happened. So there is, if the only theory I have is this, and that is from my studies of my adventures with God, that the last book of the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Hebrew, the real name of that book is Devarim, which means words, but it also means things, but it also means something magical. And that is that sometimes when you say words, words have the power to become things. And that's why it suggests in the Talmud, which is, again, 2,000 years old, that it's okay to pray silently. That's fine. But if you pray out loud, just a little out loud, the words can magically become things. And it is, I presume it's the same principle behind the 3D printer. If somebody needs the back of their skull now for surgery, you draw it and it becomes that. Mm. And you put it in their head and you save a life. The same thing is true in a magical way about words. And that somehow by saying these words in the podcast, I have accidentally changed the truth. So I think maybe I made an error, a cosmic error with the truth in terms of doing these podcasts. But again, it's a healthy thing because I believe what I did is accentuate the positive and brought more positive into my life than maybe existed in real life.
Mm, I see. Hey, the podcast, you're talking about the podcast. You're up to episode 80 now?
80. 80.
Wow. Oh, how often do you do them? How often do you do them, Steve?
I'm writing constantly. So the way we do it now is because David is so busy. So what happens is I am writing constantly because I'm starting one day at a time again. And what is today?
Today's Tuesday. Tuesday, the
Tuesday.
Yeah. The 20, okay. What is it, the 24th? 23rd.
We start rehearsal in 2 days.
Oh boy. Steven, I just want to mention, I want to get back to the podcast. I am so thrilled that One Day at a Time got renewed. And I know that you are too. But
come on.
And we talked about it, you know, a couple of times we've had you on, and I just adored the what they did with it. I thought the updating of it was perfect, and I thought the cast was amazing and you were funny on it, and it was really a much more emotional experience than I ever thought it would be. During the last episode, I cried. I just love it, and I'm so glad that it got picked up.
Oh, me too. Oh, thank you so much for that. I got to tell you, it is one of the most special projects I've ever done in my life. I mean, I've been on funny shows, yeah, and I've been on dramatic shows, sure, but I've never been on anything that has this kind of, what can I say, humanism, mm-hmm. that it can make you laugh till you hurt, and then a second later it can break your heart. But the thing I was telling the writer, I didn't want to talk too much to the writers, but what I wanted to say, because they break your heart not by pulling corny stuff out of the air like they do on some shows, but it's earned.
Yeah.
And this is the secret between you and me. The thing that is so moving about One Day at a Time is it isn't that they display things that are sad or things that are sappy or saccharine. What they do is they display human courage at the simplest level. Mm. And we find that moving. We find the single mom trying to do the best she can for her child and standing up for something that becomes moving and it affects us. Or the daughter trying to find her mother, thinking her mother is missing.
Yeah.
And I mean, it, and at the same time, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to say,
nothing like it.
I really hope that Netflix pushes for a campaign for Justina Mikado for Best Actress, because
give me a break.
She's amazing on it. It is such a wonderful portrayal, you know.
And not only that, if you ever come to LA, I'll bring you to the set and to watch her do it live in front of a real audience, where she has to do take after take after take of sometimes hilarious scenes, sometimes really heartbreaking scenes. She does it time and time and time again, and it's always in the moment, and it's always real, and none of it's canned, and none of it's fake. What I told Justina was, I said, you know, you're the new Kathy Bates. I said, even though there's nothing wrong with the old Kathy Bates,
right.
Love the old Kathy Bates,
yeah,
but you are the new Kathy Bates. She is an engine, and that engine purrs when she gets on that stage.
Yeah.
She is born to play that part.
So rehearsals begin in 2 days. I'm so excited about that. I'm so excited.
And just a spoiler, just a slight spoiler,
okay,
is I've read the first two scripts, and they're lovely.
Okay. I'm so excited.
So I get Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, that's great. Also, well, let's talk about how is everything going with Silicon Valley?
Silicon Valley, I had one of the greatest joys a young actor can have, or an old actor. I guess I'm an old actor now. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, when you do ADR, if you're folks out there, ADR is when you go in and you loop your lines after you've finished shooting, doing principal photography. Sometimes when they edit a scene, they'll move a line or want to add a line or something, and you have to go in and add these lines to a scene that's been shot. And in my scenes, the guide track was put in by Mike Judge imitating me. It is hilarious, and I promise, I will send it to you.
Please.
I will send Mike, but you have to promise that you can't play it on the air until the episode has aired.
Oh, of course. Oh, no, of course. Oh, I would love that, Stephen. I would love that.
It will make you pee in your pants. It is so funny because to see what Mike Judge has captured from my voice and my character, him doing me, it's hysterical. But I got to tell you, this season has been such a joy. It has been so funny.
Yeah.
And this is something maybe the people in the audience don't understand, what the guys have to do, what Mike and Alec and the writers have to do. For example, when season three ends, Mike and Alec go up to Silicon Valley and they talk to all the guys and all the programmers to see what they're working on. They have to come up with ideas that they think are going to be happening a year from now because, right, they have to write the scripts,
right,
shoot the scripts, edit them, and then they get out there and they can't have old ideas be in the script. They have to prognosticate where the techno world is going to be in 12 months.
Right.
Well, when we started reading these scripts at the beginning of the year, I'm going like, this is nutty stuff that they put in this fourth season. And then as events in the world unfolded as they have in this last year,
yeah,
I went like, oh my God, how did they know that?
Yeah.
The entire season just went like, wow, that is both hilarious and terrifying.
Yeah.
So I found it thrilling. It's a thrilling season this year.
I have to say that Mike Judge seems to be able to do that. I mean, you know, the guy made Idiocracy, which at this point's a documentary. So he seems to be able to predict what's going to happen, you know, and he's way ahead of the curve. Way ahead of the curve.
Yep.
So great stuff, man. Great, great stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. Okay, Stephen.
Yep.
Okay, Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, and we've got more to talk about. You can see him on Silicon Valley. You can see him on The Goldbergs. And, of course, he's been in 8 million movies. And, you know, everybody knows him as Needle Nose Ned, the insurance salesman from Groundhog Day. And he is also the author of 2 tremendous books, The Dangerous Animals Club and his latest, My Adventures with God. And also the host of a fantastic podcast, The Tobolowsky Files. And you can check out TobolowskyFiles.com for the podcast. And we have a link to everything on our Facebook page. All right, so we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Stephen Tobolowsky right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And it's Tuesday. We're not doing the 2 for Tuesdays because Dan Chigrou is not with us presently. But he will be back. And when he comes back, we'll get our themed bump stuff back on. And there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. My guest is the author of the new book, My Adventures with God, a friend of the show, a tremendous actor and an incredible talent, and a really all-around great guy, Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen, welcome back.
Oh, good to be here, Nick.
I wanted to mention, it's unpleasant, but I wanted to mention the passing of Powers Booth. You know, one of my favorite actors of all time. I was stunned when I heard about it, and his contributions to film and television are immeasurable. And I know that you knew him, and he's in the book.
He's in the book.
And I know that you knew him very well. And I you know, would you care to talk a little bit about Powers?
I would. I would love to. He when this whole, I thought it was some kind of joke.
Yeah.
When I saw it on the internet, I thought it was some kind of fake thing to get you to, like, clickbait, you know? And I went onto the just to see in the news, and there it was, and it blindsided me. Powers, of course, had had a couple brushes with the Grim Reaper even before Deadwood. And he was one of these rare guys that was, when we were together in school, we weren't buddies. He was my superior. I was like a junior in school, and Powers came in as a new grad student, and he was the king of the department.
Mm-hmm.
He even usurped Kathy Bates, who was like the king of the department, but Powers was the king of the department. And we thought, who is this guy, Powers Booth? And then we saw him on stage, and we went like, oh, he's like the best actor I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so here's this guy I knew when I was 19 years old, and we acted together in school as kids. Then in the book, like, there's some stories in the book where I was called to New York to audition with Powers for a Broadway show, which I ended up not getting, but I felt like I was at home because I was doing scenes with Powers, and we were going to be together. But what's not in the book was after the run of that show happened, I got a call from Powers, who was coming out to Los Angeles. And he said, Stephen, we're doing, we want to do the play for CBS. Leo is coming out. Leo Burmester is coming out, who also has passed away in the last couple of years. And he said, could you play the part you auditioned for in New York? And I said, yeah. So Powers and Leo and I did Lone Star as a command for performance for the executives and the people at CBS. And from that, Powers got SCAG. Leo, I think at that time, ended up with Flo. I ended up in nothing, but I got to do the play with those guys. I did get to perform it with those guys. And so Powers and I kept running into each other all the time in Los Angeles. And so he became one of my older friends.
Yeah.
And then on Deadwood, we actually were contemporaries. By the time we got to Deadwood, he was so happy that I was on the show, because he said, in my life, Tobo, I've gotten to where I can't talk about my past anymore because nobody remembers it and no one understands it, but you do because you were there.
Yeah.
We could talk about all the people that we knew, and we used to hang out in each other's trailers on Deadwood and talk, and he told me about his brushes with death, I believe I've mentioned on the show that in Deadwood, I got to have a simulated sex scene with Powers' daughter in the bathtub. Powers being the dad he was, he got his daughter the job of being the head prostitute at his saloon. And so Parise, in my life, I actually had I lived long enough to where I had a simulated sex scene with a woman who 30 years before I had diapered when I was with her dad and mom at SMU. So I mean, I cannot figure a universe of probability where that would happen.
Yeah.
But Powers was a guy of, this is what I think make Powers stand out as an actor. I have never seen anyone else who's been able to do it. He is able to convey honor. Now, I think it's something that maybe the old-timey actors, maybe Edwin Forrest or Mr. Irving, could have done back in the old Shakespearean, when the Shakespearean plays were coming through town.
Yeah.
But it's a feeling, it's an emotion which is out of style now. Powers was never with it. He wasn't ever cool. But when Powers walked on, the gravitas he had when he came to play any part was, you felt like this guy had a code.
Yeah.
Whatever part he played, he was able to invest it with dignity, with honor, and with a certain weight that no other actor could convey to a role, no matter how goofy the part was. You felt he had lived it. And that's what made Power so great, yeah. And that's what'll make his performances always stand out.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And we obviously did a tribute to him here on the show when we found out he had passed away. And I, there were a lot of titles to recommend for people to watch, but I have to say, I think my favorite Powers Booth performance is in Walter Hill's Southern Comfort.
He
is unbelievably good. He and Keith Carradine are so amazing. In that movie, and it's a hard movie to find, but he's so great in that movie. But that's just one of many, many, many great performances that Powers Booth gave.
In our past, Walter Hill, Powers, and I would play pool.
Oh my God!
And
that's the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life, Stephen.
Yeah, we play pool, and in fact, Walter Hill came over to our little house where Beth and I lived back in Hayworth in Los Angeles. Powers would come up there for parties. Jim McClure, when I visited him in Los Angeles, he said, maybe you can meet my girlfriend. And I said, well, sure, Jim. Well, she just got back in town. She was doing some sci-fi movie out of town. I'm going like, oh, this is sounding so pathetic. So I go to meet her over in the corner. She's sitting in the corner. I go, hi, I'm Jim's old roommate, Stephen Tobolowsky. She goes, oh, hi, I'm Sigourney. I go, well, hi, Sigourney. So Jim says you've just been working on a sci-fi film. And she goes, yeah, it's called Alien. And I'm thinking, God help us. This is so pathetic. This girl had to go out of town to shoot some stupid movie called Alien. They couldn't even think of a good name for the movie. So anyway, I'm out in Los Angeles, and I'm with our children's theater group. We go, hey, look, Jim's girlfriend's in this movie, Alien. Why don't we go see it? So we all go after seeing a kid's show. To go see Alien. I'm halfway through the opening credits, and I'm about to pee my pants. I'm going like, I don't think I could watch this movie. When the thing goes on someone's face, I'm going like, I've had it with it. I'm leaving the theater. I mean, I'm shaking. I'm just absolutely shaking. And I call my sister. I said, whatever you do, don't go see this movie called Alien, whatever you do. And she says, well, I'd like Tom Skerritt. I said, won't help. That won't help. And she says, but like John Hurt is such a good act. No. You don't want to see it because of that. Anyway, Gorney used to come over to our house with Walter Hill and with Powers because they were going to do a movie of Lone Star, which was going to be a combination of Jim's one acts of Lone Star and Laundry and Bourbon. And Sigourney was going to play Powers' wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all used to hang out together. And Walter Hill was supposed to direct Alien.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his credit, he's got an executive producer credit on Alien.
And he felt that the movie was developing to have too many special effects, and he felt uncomfortable with it. So he wanted to get this director that didn't have a lot of experience, but had a lot of experience with technical things, this guy, Ridley Scott, whoever he was. And so Walter Hill became the executive producer of Alien. And Ridley Scott became director, and the rest is kind of history.
Right, and 38 years later, another one just opened.
Another one just opened.
Exactly. Stephen, can you hang on?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, hang on. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. He's great, and he's got such great stories. And we have to talk a little bit more about the book and other things. And the book is called My Adventures with God. It is a great book, and it's his follow-up to The Dangerous Animals Club, which is also a great book. A tremendous actor who's been in a ton of things, a great storyteller and a great writer. We're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up here. And then after the news, more with Stephen Tobolowsky on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday morning, 312-981-7200 is our phone number and our text number. And a little bit later on, we're going to play another edition of Pop-Up Video, me and Esmeralda. But right now, I want to welcome back to the show one of my favorite guests, just a great person. We're trying to have some of our favorite guests here leading up to the induction ceremony of the Walk of Fame, of which I'm incredibly humbled and honored to be inducted on Thursday. And tomorrow, by the way, Steve and Johnny are going to join us to talk about not just their induction, but all 10 of the inductees have all worked with Steve and Johnny. And so we will talk about that tomorrow as well, leading up to the induction on Thursday. And I will be off Thursday morning and Friday morning, just taking off because it's going to be a big day on Thursday, and I'm just going to take the weekend. But Stephen Tobolowsky is one of my favorite guests, been on the show a bunch of times. His book is called My Adventures with God, and we welcome Stephen back. Stephen, welcome back.
Oh, good to be here, Nick. I thought of one other power story.
Okay.
You probably know. It's in Dangerous Animals. You mentioning Dangerous Animals Club reminded me of this, but it was an example of powers as an actor. When we did Deadwood, ordinarily you get up at dawn and you would go out into the country, and David Milch liked to shoot with natural light, so he wanted to shoot when the sun was coming up. So ordinarily you rehearse in the dark, you get everything down, then David Milch makes 50 million different changes to the script,
right,
and the sun comes up and you try to do it. So we were having just an amazing storm outside, and I was supposed to meet Powers in the Bella Union, and we were going to plan something against Swearengen. And so it was pouring rain, and I'm supposed to come in from outside, and there's mud probably about a foot deep outside. So we did one take where I come into the bar, and Powers and I do the scene, and then they say, okay, let's try take two. So take two, there was a horse outside the bar that was sick and tired of being outside the bar in the rain. So when I came in, the horse walks in behind me up to the bar.
Right.
So now it's a scene with Powers and Garrett, me, and the horse. So Powers has this monologue, and for some reason, Powers starts thinking that the horse now has been added to the scene. So we're making this plan against Swearengen. He says, okay, this is what I want you to do. He talks to Garrett. He goes, you do this. Then he talks to me. You do this. And then he does this speech to the horse, and I want you to go over. I want you to go over. And if you see that son of a bitch, then, you know, you want you to... And then they go, okay, cut, cut, cut. And then Powers came up to me and says, Tobo, did Milch add that horse to the scene? And I said, no, Powers, no. He says, so that horse just walked into the bar? And I go, yeah. He says, so I just did that entire scene with the horse? I go, yeah, Powers, but it's going to be so good at the closing night party. Think of how good that footage is going to be.
That's great. That is just great. Oh, man. All right. I want to talk about some specific things in the book, especially the early stuff from your childhood. I have to say this at the onset. My crew here that I work with on the overnights, they laugh at me every time I mention how much I love the card game Authors. And they mock me, Stephen. They mock me. And I'm 10 pages into your damn book, and boom. And there it is. And I just want to say I just want to say another thing you and I have in common, Stephen. We love the game Authors and played it as children.
Absolutely. My Aunt Sarah taught me both great writing, great writers, and gin rummy at the same time.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I just was tickled when I saw that you mentioned that game. After all the abuse I've taken from the people I work with, they think the game is
serves them right.
I really, you know, the book is great. The stories are always really, really interesting, and so well, so well done. I wanted to mention that when you were talking about because a portion of the book deals with your relationship with Beth in that time period that you've already talked about. But one of the chapters is kind of astounding to me, which kind of focuses on your psychic ability that you had. Can you tell?
Yeah, that was creepy and weird, and you know, it keeps coming up at different points in my life. I was I was at a point where I was in love with this girl, Beth. I didn't know how to get a date with her. I was a sophomore. She was a freshman in college. So that figure, what, I'm 19 years old, something like that.
Right.
So I go on a movement retreat. Back then, you have to go back to the 70s, a movement retreat. And back then, I was completely sober. You know, I didn't drink beer even then,
and
let alone smoke weed. And so the teacher wants us all to breathe and om and hold hands. And then we were moving in a circle, like if he's 12 o'clock and I'm 6 o'clock. And he says, I want everyone to say the first thing that comes in your mind. And so everyone in the class is going like, Frodo, Frodo, ring, wizard, beer, far out. You know, it's just
this
stuff coming to me. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I just hate this. I don't know what I'm going to say. And it's coming to me. Don't know what I'm going to say. And I feel this, like, noise in my head and just this tone in my head. And I open my mouth. And what comes out of my mouth is I look at the teacher across the fire. And I go, I get that you're not who you say you are. I get that your name is really J.M. or J.K. And then we go back around the circle, and they're going, Frodo, Frodo, far out, wizard. And they keep going, just, I'm leaving the little meeting, you know, the retreat.
Right.
And the teacher comes up to me out of the shadows and says, why did you say that about me? And I said, I don't know. You said to say this first thing that came to your head, and that was the first thing that came to my head. He says, because it's true. I changed my name when I took this job. I came from West Virginia, and my original initials are what you said. Has anyone ever discussed having psychic abilities before? I go, no, I don't know. He says, well, do you want to come on over to my house sometime? I have this Japanese prayer stool. It's an instrument, a powerful psychic connection. And I said, well, can I bring Beth? And he goes, well, certainly. It was my first day.
Right.
So I go over to his house, and he pulls out this Japanese prayer stool, and Beth is sitting there, and I'm there. And he says, hold my hands across the stool. And I had an aversion to holding my teacher's hands, but he was a very nice man. And I took a breath, and I hear this noise in my head. And for some reason, I opened my mouth and said, well, there's a five-year-old by the fireplace, and there's a 40-year-old woman on the phone in the kitchen. And he lets go of my hands, and he pales, and he starts walking around the room. And I go, what's is everything okay? He said, I was babysitting my five-year-old nephew. He was standing by the fireplace. I told him to move. It wasn't safe. And he ran outside and was hit by a car. And my sister, on her 40th birthday, called me on that phone in the kitchen and committed suicide on the phone call. My heart's breaking. I mean, I'm feeling horrible at the time. I drive home with Beth, and she said, what do you know about me? And I say, nothing. She says, look, do you see any? I said, I don't see anything. And she says, no. You were saying before you heard things. Do I make a sound? And I said, yes, you do. And what sound do I make? And I told her what the sound meant. And she said, we are going to make a fortune. Listen, why don't we be a team? I'll bring people up to you. We'll charge them a quarter, maybe even a dollar. And you say this stuff, whatever you say about the sound in your head, that's fantastic. And it turned out, as in the book, it turned out not to be so much fun, because I told people things and they wondered, how creepy is this that I know this? And so I told Beth, I am not doing this anymore. So that's when I'm 19. We ended up together. Beth and I ended up together about 16 or 17 years.
Yeah.
And during the period of that time, she ended up winning the Pulitzer Prize. Go figure.
Yeah.
For that great play, Crimes of the Heart.
That's
great writer.
Yeah.
And when you're a rising star, you meet other rising stars. So she met Jonathan Demme, who was a rising star at the time. He just had done Melvin and Howard.
Right.
Beth and I are leaving exercise, and Jonathan comes by in his car and says, hey, do you want to see a rough cut of this new movie I'm doing, Stop Making Sense? Sure. So we jump in his car, and he drives us to the Academy, and we go in there, and there's David Byrne and Tina and Chris and Jerry. The talking heads are there in a 1,900-seat theater. Jonathan Demme, Beth and me, and I believe Jonathan's former wife, Evelyn, was there. And it's the first time I ever saw and heard the Talking Heads on the big screen. Never had heard a song of theirs, nothing. And I am completely blown away. That night at dinner, David Byrne kind of corners me and he says, well, tell me what you thought about the movie. I mean, and tell me all the bad parts. I want to hear the bad stuff. And we talked for a couple of hours. Well, it turned out David was shooting a video for their band's new song, Road to Nowhere. And
right.
if you Google Road to Nowhere, if you look that on YouTube, the underwater scenes were shot in Beth and my swimming pool. So if you see, they have a shot in our, so they're shooting the video, and he starts talking about this new project he wanted to do. Stories about people that were true but were too incredible to believe.
Right.
And Beth says, well, you ought to talk to my sweetie because he hears tones. And David Byrne looks at me and goes, you hear tones? And so I end up telling the story I just told you, Nick.
Yeah.
And told the audience. The crazy story about when I was in college. So Beth and I ended up getting the job for writing the movie True Story.
Right.
For David Byrne and the Talking Heads. And along the way, David Byrne added a character in that movie that can hear tones.
Right.
And about a year later, I'm driving in the Hollywood Hills, and David Byrne starts banging on my window. He's on his bicycle. He says, roll down your window. He says, you doing anything? I need to play something for you. So we go back to my house, and David has a cassette. He says, I just wrote a song for the character who hears tones. It's called Radiohead. And he played for me the first version of the song Radiohead. And I thought, oh, my God, the beginning of my relationship with Beth was captured like an insect in amber by David Byrne. And little did any of us know, like that was in 78. In 1981, wait, is that correct?
No, it's later than that. It was later than that, yeah.
88.
Yeah,
88. The
yeah.
movie came out. In 91, the band On a Friday in New York, in England, Oxfordshire, England, decided to change their name, and they loved David Byrne so much, and they loved True Story so much, they changed their name from On a Friday to Radiohead. So actually, the band Radiohead got their name from David Byrne's song, who got it from my story of what happened to me when I was 19 years old.
It's the greatest. That's one of the best stories I've ever heard, Stephen. Fantastic.
Next, the powers and the horse.
That's it, man. That's fantastic. And also, we got to, you know, we got to talk a little bit about powers, and we just lost Jonathan Demme recently too, and we got a great story out of that too. Stephen, it is a joy to know you. That's all I can say. And your book, the latest one, is My Adventures with God. It's great. Tobolowsky Files podcast is awesome, and everything is available online. And I can't wait to continue watching Silicon Valley, and the return of One Day at a Time, and whatever you do in the future. Stephen, you're the best. Thank you so much for joining me. It's a special week, and I'm glad you were here.
You bet, Nick. And congratulations again.
Thanks, man. All right, take care, Stephen.
You bet.
Okay. Stephen Tobolowsky, everybody. What can you say? The guy rules. All right. We have to take a break here on 720 WGN.